Welcome to the Philippe Matthews Show at thepmshow.tv. Named the Oprah of the Internet by Mark Victor Hansen, Philippe Matthews doesn't ask questions that are different. He simply asks questions that make a difference. The Philippe Matthews Show features entertainers, bestsellers, authors, thought leaders, change agents, and world-class experts in the field of personal, spiritual, and professional development. An internet marketing entrepreneur, Philippe is the creator of the How Movement, dedicated to teaching people how to move from the mindset of hope to the process of how. If you are ready to take your life to the next level, move from the mindset of why to the mindset of why not. Tune in right now to this latest edition of the Philippe Matthews Show and watch your life grow.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen, with another phenomenal episode of the Philippe Matthews Show. I am so stoked. I'm so psyched and so hyped today. I have scraped the entire planet, and I have found the one and only, the original Baron of Wine. His name is E.D. Bourdon. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, Philippe. How are you? It's good to talk to you. And I'm very honored to be on your show.
Well, there's a lot of static in your phone. Is there a way you can mitigate that or somehow?
Yeah, hang on a second.
Oh, there we go. That's much better right there, my friend.
Is it better like this?
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. It's always crazy when you're taping live here, even though it's pre-recorded. So, listen, you are an actual baron, is that correct? I mean, people, know you the world over, but you're an actual baron.
Yes, I am. It's because, the king of France, quite a few years ago, because, we haven't had a king in France for centuries, I've given the title to my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, and it goes to the oldest son of the oldest son, and on and on. So my father was the Baron de Bourdon, and then his father, and so I got the title. Yes,
that is incredible. So, let's go back a little bit, because I'm sure people would like to know. What was your childhood like? What was family life like growing up in this beautiful, beautiful country of France?
Well, it was absolutely amazing I'm very fortunate because my father was in the army. And we've moved a lot. So I was born in Austria, and we lived in Paris, in Brussels, in Bordeaux, and in Saumur, which is the horse capital of the world, and in Strasbourg, which is right next to Germany. And my father had great posting also, so it was absolutely fantastic. And we used to spend our summers at my grandparents', and both my grandparents had estates in Bordeaux, close to Bordeaux, one in Pauillac and one on the east side of Bordeaux, which were wine estates. So from my childhood, I've been surrounded by people in the wine, but we didn't think about wine business in those days. It was just life as it used to be, and we'd take our bicycle and visit friends in Chateau Pichon Comtesse and Pichon Baron, and then we go to Chateau La Naissance, and when we go Chateau Lafitte, my grandmother taught catechism to a man who eventually became the cellar master of Chateau Mouton-Rothschild. So, it's all like, it's not in the genes, because it can't be in the genes, but it was really very close family. And my grandfather was in the wine business. And my father inherited an estate from one of his uncles, and that he kept until the end of the beginning of the 60s, 1960s. Because after that he didn't have time to take care of it, so he sold it. But that's, I've been in there, and my family has been there since, I tell you, at least the beginning of the 19th century.
Well, you have a lot of wine experience as well when you came to the States. Talk about that, because you're not just versed in fresh wine, you're versed in all wine.
Well, this is because when I was in the wine business, I was buying and selling wines. I was, when you have to sell wines to a national importer here in the United States or in Germany for that matter, or any country, it's important to know what you're buying, because it's much easier to sell what you've bought. So I was buying the wines all over France. I was buying wines in Italy, in Germany, and in Spain, and I've sold wines in. So mostly in the United States, Canada, England, Denmark, Holland, Germany. I mean, it was fantastic. So, and also wine from Portugal, and maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But and then I was doing business for my selection of wines, especially in Bordeaux. I was helped a lot by Professor Emile Penaud. And Professor Emile Penaud is like the father of modern enology. Enology is the science of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the head of the enology department at the University of Bordeaux. And he was, it's very interesting, but he was traveling at that time in all the world to start new vineyards. I remember him telling us about new vineyards in Mexico, new vineyards in California, new vineyards in Argentina, in Chile, in Australia. And when I went to Australia for my business, also, of course, was in contact with the wine people in Australia and New Zealand. And New Zealand was, it was like just the beginning of the wines in New Zealand. And it's amazing because this world of wine has really exploded. And then the wines
really
of South
has.
Africa are now, you know, coming out really in a very strongly and with the great qualities. Although they were known in South Africa, but now they're being exported, and it's fantastic. And all the wines of Central Europe also. So you see, this world of wine has become at the same time has expanded a lot, but at the same time it's become in a way more friendly. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm,
It can become more friendly.
Well, it's interesting because. When I'm originally from Chicago, and I moved to California, and of course, when I came to California, one of the first things that I got introduced to was wine tasting, because I'm near Napa Valley and Shenandoah Valley and Fairclay and all of these phenomenal wines, and I absolutely fell in love. And literally, at one point, I probably belonged to like 20 different wine clubs. It was absolutely insane. And I would go every single week because it was only a 45-minute drive. I would literally go every week because, one, I love the drop, and I love the smell, and I love the grapes. And I would just go to every vineyard, and I would just wine taste, and I love ports, and I just had a blast. So what I love about you is that you actually teach people not only about wine, but how to taste it, how to buy it, how to enjoy it, and how to really make it an experience. Now, you have a book, I believe, called Choosing Wine Made Easy. Is that right?
It is absolutely correct. And it's, 47 tips to help you become more confident in the world of wine.
Wow.
You know that because you've done it, and people drink wine because, it's kind of fashionable and it's nice, and it's nice to drink a good glass of wine with friends.
Oh, God, yes.
But how do I choose my wine, and who is choosing my wine for me, and why do they choose this wine, or how,
sure.
how do they pair the wine with the food I'm having?
That's right, that's right.
At that point, all of a sudden, people kind of become confused or a bit embarrassed sometimes, especially if they're in charge. If you're an executive and you're inviting, customers or potential customers, and you have to relinquish your power to the sommelier or the wine steward, you don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like it. And there are ways, very easy ways, to really keep the power, keep control, so that you know what you're doing, and the sommelier knows what you're doing.
Well, what I really like about this is, I've been watching your videos, and we're going to blast a lot of your videos out to our audience to let them see, what you actually offer. And you also, your website, is it Wine Made Easy? ChoosingWineMadeEasy.com, isn't it?
ChoosingWineMadeEasy.com. And
yeah.
Also, yes. And that's they can get a lot. They can get free information on there, and it's really something that they can help. And I also have another one, which is TheUltimateWineTrip.com.
Yes, I want to talk about that as well, because now this is really cool. So you have a couple of things that I think is a necessity for anyone wanting to know anything about wine at any level. So the first thing you have is Choosing Wine Made Easy. You've got the book, of course. Then you have the website. People can go there. You do webinars and teleseminars teaching people about wine, which is fantastic because that can, you know, anybody in the world then can chime in and dial in and get this great information. But the other thing that you do that I think is, and obviously I'm going to be doing it, is that you have the ultimate wine trip. Oh, my God. Talk to us about that.
So, you know, people do a lot of wine tours. There are lots of wine tours around, and but I call it the ultimate wine fantasy experience because the difference is that I take people to Bordeaux, Burgundy, and Paris, but what I do is I take them to my nobility, friends, and family, and we're invited in the castles. So some of these castles are among the top wine estates in the world,
wow,
in Bordeaux and Burgundy, but some are not. But it's the culture around wine. We're going to have a dinner or lunch in this castle. We're going to be hosted by my friends or my family. And, you know, it's going to be, you're going to be having a dinner with the Count and Countess d'Armaillet, my cousins, or the Count and Countess de Nadiac, my friend for 50 years. And they're going to be hosting you like friends because you're coming with me. So you're their friends. You're their friends. And of course there'll be great wines, and of course there'll be great food, but it's going to be like the undertone, because it's all about conversation and being welcome and becoming friends and having great conversations and a lot of fun. And that's what it's all about. This is why I call it an experience. It's also, of course, going to be about wine, but at some point, wine is almost like the foundation, but that's all. The rest is built on top.
Absolutely. I think once you know your wines, and Lord knows I'm not an expert, but I absolutely enjoy having great wine. But I think once you learn your wine, the world just kind of opens up to you. I also, everybody knows I'm a cigar aficionado, so I love pairing a great wine with a great cigar. So let's talk about,
That's a good one, too.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, we have to get together. We have to do that, Eve. That's going to be absolutely a must. So now, what is the web address for the Ultimate Wine experience?
It's theultimatewinetrip.com.
Theultimatewinetrip.com. Okay. Now, let's get into some nuts and bolts here, because I'm sure people listening are going to say, oh, this is all great, but, you know, I've got some basic questions. So, all right, how do you differentiate between a $50 bottle of wine versus a $500 bottle of wine? What are the factors? So how much should one pay for a quality bottle of wine?
Okay, between a $50 bottle of wine and a $500 bottle of wine, that's I would say that's the easiest. That's the easiest because the $500 bottle of wine will be coming from an estate or a chateau or a domain here, you know, in California, which is very well known. And then you can really find all the information about how old the vineyard is, how old are the vines, how they are treated, how the harvest is done, how the aging in oak is done, how the when the bottling has been done, and the traceability of the bottles that you're buying, because you want to make sure that they're the wine that comes from the estate, not somebody that has stuck a label on the bottle of something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, I would say, that would be the easiest. The easiest would be to differentiate these two. The difficult part, in my opinion, is between a $60 bottle of wine and a $25 bottle of wine.
Mm-hmm.
Because they might be about the same, and the difference would be about marketing.
Mm.
You know, and
wow.
And I would say, you know, in my opinion, you have the bulk of all these wines are about all the, you know, more or less the same in quality. So you'll have all the violins coming out, and that's what I call the marketing part. You know, to tell you this and this and that about the wine. But, you know, if you really look at how all these wines are made, there is a big difference. Like, I'm going to give you just one example. When it's harvest time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Where does the grape come from? When is it cut? How long does it take to get to the cellar? And what happens when it gets to the cellar? For the $500 wine, it's, I would tell you, it takes like 5 to 15 minutes from the vineyard to the cellar. And when the grapes get there, they are destemmed, you know, that the berries are taken out of the stem. And then the berries, the grapes themselves, are sorted by hand to make sure that there is no crushed, rotten, green leaves, twigs, anything which will go in the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Or the wine, the grapes are bought from all over the place, and it takes, you know, they're trucked to the cellar, and sometimes they sit, as I've seen, for hours in the sun before they can be processed. And the truck, like, you know, it's like pours all the grapes in a machine. It's destemmed, but you still have a bunch of twigs, leaves, grapes. You know, the grapes are not sorted like they are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like bulk, you know. And I'm not saying it's going to make a bad wine.
It's just a different process in terms of handling.
It's a definitely totally different process. It's a totally different product.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and most of all these wines are made the bulk way, I'm sorry to say. And so the rest will differentiate is marketing. So you have to study a little bit or find someone who can help you and tell you, you know, well, this is about the same. And I would suggest you do a real comparative tasting, which means that you're going to take the same kind of wines and taste them blind.
Mm-hmm.
Because often the tasting you go to, what are they? They give you a glass, and you go from booth to booth, and you drink your wine after four or five glasses of wine. I mean, your brain is very happy, but there is no way, there is no way you can sort the wines by quality. It's done.
True.
You're done for.
Sure.
So
sure.
A comparative tasting, very thorough, and you spit out the wine. So it doesn't get to your brain as fast. It does a little bit, but not as fast. And let's say you take 5 Cabernet Sauvignon or 10 Cabernet Sauvignon from the same year from different estates.
Aha.
You take 5 Merlot, same vintage. You know, the vintage is the year the wine was harvested, not the wine, the year where the wine was bottled. So you take same vintage, 10 wines. Above 10 wines, I would say it takes a little bit of training. And then you pour them in a glass, you hide the bottles, you put numbers, and then you choose the wine and you'll see which wine you like best.
Wow. Now, most people have never even don't know this. This is great.
Yeah, and that's what I teach, you know, how to taste wine. And I show people how to really taste wine. And it makes a big difference. And then all of a sudden, when you go to a bar or you go to a restaurant, you remember because you made notes. And, you know, it's a whole different world.
So tell me about this. You know, what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have when choosing wine, or when it comes to wine in general?
Well, I would say, first of all, that's a good tip, by the way. People, when they sit at the restaurant, okay, what is the first thing that is happening? The sommelier comes and says, would you care for a drink or a glass of wine? So if your wine, if your dinner is going to be about wine, you don't want hard liquor before the dinner, because
your
appetite is going to kill your taste. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to offer something, I would offer a glass of champagne or a glass of sparkling California wine. You have some excellent sparkling California wines, you know, like from Anderson Valley. They make some beautiful wines there. Beautiful sparkling wines. So it doesn't kill your appetite. Usually the level of alcohol is not as strong in the sparkling wine as it is in other white wines. And then you choose your food, and then you order the wine. And that's, you know, because otherwise how can you pair food and wine? If you order the wine and then you're going to order the food. So what happens? Somebody is asking for a salmon steak, the other one for a ribeye, and the third one from chicken parmigiano.
is there a general rule? That's a very good point. Is there a general rule where if you're having chicken or pasta, it should be a white wine? If you're having red meats, then it should be a red wine. What are some of the rules there?
The basic general large rule, which has a lot of exception, is red wine with red meat, white wine with white meat, or white fish or fish. Okay, but if you have a fish with a red wine sauce, have a red wine. Yeah, like some fish have you do some very good. If you have veal with a cream sauce, it can very well go with a white wine. With a Chardonnay from Burgundy, So the rule is basic, but it has a lot of exceptions. The main thing is you order the food and then you order the wine. Because if you have guests, let's say you have a table with 10 people, you might have to order a bottle of red and a bottle of white, depending on who's having what at the table. You can't have, maybe you won't have everybody drinking the same wine.
This is fantastic. You know what I want to do? I can see that we're going to have you come back several times on the show, because there's so many questions that I want to ask, and each one I think ends up being an entire show. I mean, for instance, when do you have a blush versus a varietal, and what are the differences? On your teleconference, and your webinar, I was watching, and everybody, when you go, you will get a free gift actually from E.D. Bourdon. That one of that free gift is really teaching people about how to handle older wines. Let's talk about that a little bit. Is there such a thing as a wine too old to drink?
Yes. There is a wine, and this is why it's important when you keep wine in your cellar to have a bottle from time to time. Let's say some wines need to be aged. So you buy two cases of, you have 24 bottles. That's two cases of bottles, okay? And you say, okay, for 5 years from now, I'm trying a bottle. Oh, this wine is very nice, very good, but it's still very strong and it has a lot of, then you're at 20 years, the 20 years mark. You taste the wine and then you see, now it's starting to really get really nice and delicate, and it has all these different complex flavors and aromas that come out with from the old wine. But then at some point, you will find out that, it's time. You see that it's at the end. It's starting to have a weakness or a thinness in the wine. That is a sign that the wine is going to be gone soon. And it even happened to me once. I remember sharing a bottle of 1906. I won't name the chateau because we're drinking, and as we're pouring the wine in the glass, and we found it very delicate and delicious, and it was fantastic. And then all of a sudden, in front of our eyes, in 5 minutes, the wine was gone and became like chocolate color in our glass, and that was it. There was no more
wine. Wow.
Okay. So it's important that, it's important to have to age the wines that need to be aged, red and white, for that matter. Some great Burgundy whites age very well. But it's important to make sure that you are tasting them from time to time so that they're not over the hill and you have a cellar full of bottles that are not drinkable anymore.
Because
remember, wine is made to be drunk.
Amen, brother.
And that's a fact.
You don't have to tell me twice. You're preaching to the choir over here. they say it's also good to have a glass of red wine every evening. I believe in France they call that health. Here in America we call that an alcoholic. But so you call me what you will, but I have to have a nice glass of wine in the evening or after that have a good cigar and a good cognac. But let's talk about this. Where should people go to by one. Most people go to, you know, like maybe Costco or their local, you know, food mart where they might have a little wine selection. Where are the best places for, or should people go to the vineyards if they have access to that, or where should they go to purchase their wine?
Well, I think it's both, actually. Both, you know, going to the vineyards, if you have the opportunity to go to the vineyards, or get in touch with them if you have time, and if you can visit, that's even the best, because you can talk to the winemaker maybe,
or
at least someone there, hopefully the winemaker, but usually you have to have connections to talk to the winemaker. Actually, Costco, you know, is not a bad place to buy wine. I'm really surprised sometimes at the great bottles that they have. The other day I was looking, you know, they have the here in... they have a glass case where they have these sometimes these I would say bottles of really high-end wines. The other day they were, had a Petrus. They had a Petrus 2005, I think, for a very good price compared to what you could find in some places. It was $1,900 and some.
Wow.
I didn't buy it, but I knew it was a very good price.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a bottle of Cristal champagne. You heard about Cristal champagne.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they're good friends. And the price was also fantastic. So, you know, you have some good. I would say you have some good buyers at Costco. But look also at your liquor store and talk to you to the store manager.
Okay.
And if you're looking for a wine and you have a hard time getting it, or you're intimidated in, you know, because you don't live close by to the vineyard, so you, well, ask him, can you order this wine for me, or what do you, you know, and if he should be helpful, you know, and help you with that.
Well, now, another question that comes up a lot, and actually, it's what got me really into wines. My sweetheart, when I was in Chicago, sent me a port wine, and I had never had a port wine before, and it just knocked my... She sent me the port wine, two bottles of port wine, and some chocolates, like strawberry chocolates. Yes, she was courting me, and I was courting her.
she was good.
She got the prize. I mean, you know, we've been together like 10 years. that got me to California. But I had never had port, and a lot of people have never, well, might have heard of port, but haven't had it. So can you tell us the difference between... you had talked about this earlier in Portugal, a port versus a dessert wine versus a red wine versus a white wine.
Well, first, it's a different process, so we don't have time to go into details now, but it's...
Sure.
But it's more of a fortified wine, and port, and they have some, you know, the process is really amazing because they have aging, they have some ports which are aged in casks for a very long time, and it gives a very typical and special type of aromas and flavors to these wines.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that, I was drinking port in France. We actually, in our family, my parents would offer a glass of port before the meal, you know, before dinner, before lunch. And I went to London. You know, I was sent to London to learn how to speak the language, and I still have to learn how to speak it. But and I found out that they had port at the end of the meal with Stilton, with the cheese, and it was a new experience because all of a sudden the meal took a different direction. You know, it's like as if the meal, once the meal is ended, everybody wants to leave. I mean, it's like over. But then you come back with a Stilton and the port, and it's like a new avenue that you're opening, and people have conversation, and they...
Sure, it's a new party that started, absolutely.
And the experience is very different. And then when the cheese is over, that's when you can light up your cigar.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I don't want you. I'm not trying to push you to smoke, but you know, because especially in California, they tell me it's bad for health.
Well, what was that old saying that George Burns said when he was 100 years old? If I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. So, and he smoked cigars until the day he died, 101, 105. Yeah, so forget all of you people out there. If you don't want me to smoke, don't listen to the show. Anyway, but I have to have a cigar and a good wine and a good cognac over time.
Yeah. And the poor wine makes it a very different experience. But again, you know, it has to be balanced with the menu. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you
mm-hmm.
do that, don't have a red wine on the cheese if you have cheese at the end of the meal, or
mm-hmm.
don't go back and forth and then come up with a port in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that would be totally unbalanced. So think
mm-hmm.
about your menu. You know, and the progression and how it fits with the food, and you don't want if you don't overfeed people with huge appetizers and huge entree, and then come up with a silken and the port when nobody has any more as an appetite anymore. You need to be hungry still, otherwise you won't be able to enjoy.
Sure.
And the wine
sure.
and the cheese.
Great advice. Great information. For the bon vivants of wine tasting and wine connoisseurs, is it true that there are particular types of glass that allow the wine to taste better or more pure? Is that a fact or is that a myth?
It's a fact. And I think that the best way to find out is you do a comparative tasting with the same wine, one plastic glass, one glass, one crystal glass with a one glass made of glass with a stem, and a tulip shape, then a crystal glass with a stem and a tulip shape, not too big, about 6 to 8 ounces size, and you pour in the wine about 2 ounces in each glass.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you do the blind tasting. You're going to be amazed.
That is so incredible.
And
that's incredible.
Yep. You're going to be amazed because, I'll tell you, it's very simple. Because our mind is set in some ways. And we see plastic, we think it's not as good.
Very true. Very true.
Okay, so I think it's like if I blindfold you, and I put 15 glasses, you know, 9 red wines, 5 white wines, and a glass of water, blindfolded, you'll have a very hard time to find a glass of water.
Mmm. That is amazing.
It is amazing. The way
amazing.
You see, the science of tasting has really improved a lot in the last 25, 30 years, and it's
mm-hmm.
a lot of changes. And and we find out that the role of our different senses, you know, it's at the same time, it's very complex, but it has to get together to really have a tasting experience that is of great quality. And if you disable the vision, if you disable the smell, or if you disable the taste buds, then your tasting experience will not be achieved the way it should be.
Incredible. Yves de Bourgogne, you are literally the Baron of Wine. I absolutely love you, love what you're doing, and want you to come back on the show and let's really dig in each time and talk about all of the particulars, you know. So let's just do one where we talk about white wines and the difference between a Chardonnay and a Viognier, or just, you know, what a Syrah versus a Petite Syrah, and how to choose a cab, and all of these. There's just a sundry of things that we can have fun with, and I think people can really enjoy. So with that, what, again, are your web addresses?
The ChoosingWineMadeEasy.com
uh-huh.
and TheUltimateWineTrip.com.
Question: how many wine trips do you do? How many trips do you do? What is the process of that for somebody wanting to take that on?
It is very expensive, and you have to go to the travel agent to find out. And we do usually we try to go four times in the spring and twice in the fall.
Okay, fantastic, fantastic.
Then, yes.
And people can go to choosingwinemadeeasy.com to sign up for your webinars and teleseminars. How often do you do those?
Well, I do that. You know, I have the webinars on a monthly basis, and I also have a blog, and also I'm ready to answer questions. You know, people, I'm easy to reach and talk to people. So just get in touch with me, and I'll do what I can.
Fantastic. Thank you, my friend. Love you. Can't wait to have you back on the show. Let's talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Philippe. It was really a pleasure, and it's going to be my pleasure to come back and talk with you.
All right, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.